Buffalo can hang on. This is going to be a good one.
The fans at Kansas Speedway know how to have a good time. And you are all invited. NASCAR weekend at Kansas Speedway, May 4th and 5th. Get your tickets now at kansasspeedway.com.
We are back with another edition of The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, kicking off the show today on the board for Marco Marquez, but he'll be joining us later on in the show today. Shout out to our presenting sponsors, starting with Gerritsen and Toth. They handle the most complex felony, federal, or state criminal defense cases. You'll find they've been doing that successfully, helping criminal defendants all over the Kansas City area in Northeast Kansas for years. We have more than enough to get into today. Of course, we'll have college football to talk about. We'll have NFL football to talk about. But boy, oh boy, could it have not gone any worse for the Kansas City Chiefs on Sunday afternoon against the Indianapolis Colts. I believe I said multiple times on the show last week, and I can admit when I'm wrong, and I was more than wrong about this game in Indianapolis on Sunday. I thought it would be an easy one for Kansas City. I feel like there was no way in hell, unless the Chiefs played their worst game of the season, which they did, that the Colts could even make it close. I didn't feel confident in the Colts covering. This game was in a dome, though the roof was open. Conditions were perfect. You felt like all they needed to do was not shoot themselves in the foot, and this would be a two-touchdown win for Kansas City. You move on to Tampa Bay, Sunday Night Football against Tom Brady, and you're 3-0. Now you sit here at 2-1, and though the rest of the division didn't play well either, it is making you doubt some things. Now, there's time to overreact about a loss, and there's time not to overreact about a loss. The one thing about this game is that the Chiefs special teams deserves every ounce of the blame. That was the worst performance I've ever seen under Dave Tobe, with players actually on the field and with penalties, play calling, gaffes in the field. And it started with Sky Moore. And like I just said, you don't want to overreact to certain losses, certain plays, but I have a strong feeling that game turns out differently if the tone wasn't set by Sky Moore. Right after your defense plays lights out on the first drive, first series, 3-and-out, you brought the pressure. Matt Ryan looked very uncomfortable in those three plays. Jonathan Taylor didn't get anything. They were going to punt the ball back to Kansas City, and there you go. The offense has 85, 90 yards to go, but you're tied up. You just sent a message to the Colts offense that this defense is going to be in Matt Ryan's face all game long, and now the offense had its chance to overcome its struggles that happened last Thursday when they couldn't really move the ball against the Chargers defense. This was not a good Colts defense. This was a Colts defense without its best player in Shaq Leonard. So you were not going up against much on Sunday afternoon. But Sky Moore decides to field a punt inside his own 15-yard line. And you felt like something was coming when he was kind of tracking the ball oddly. His feet were shuffling around a lot. It didn't look like he was comfortable to catch that football. And he didn't. He muffs it. He turns around, has no idea where the ball is. Colts recover it inside the five. Three plays later, the Colts score. And from that point on, it felt like the message was sent. The Chiefs were not ready to play. They were asleep. They clearly didn't think much of their opponent. Then the offense continued to struggle. Guys weren't getting open. The offensive line was... Oof. The offensive line did not have a good day yesterday. And this is a good offensive line. I think we can comfortably say this offensive line is top 10 in the NFL. It was a stretch that ESPN called it the best offensive line in football because it was not even close to that yesterday. There were a handful of plays where Patrick Mahomes was caved in in the pocket. There were a couple of plays where he had two, maybe 2.5 seconds of a deep drop back. And for Patrick Mahomes' play style, he needs a little bit more than that. And if you drop back 10, 15 yards, you should have more than 2.5 seconds. There was even a play where Orlando Brown Jr., who wants to be the highest paid left tackle in football, he fell down. No contact, no push from the edge rusher. He just fell down on the snap. He tripped over the turf, his own feet. Whatever the case may be, it left a Colts edge rusher unimpeded to the quarterback, basically. That was one of the games where you look at Orlando Brown Jr. and go, I don't know if we can pay you after that one. And it hasn't been the greatest start through three games for Orlando Brown Jr., let alone this offensive line. Clyde Edwards-Helaire yesterday rushed for no yards on seven carries. This running back room is not going to get a lot of yards on the season if they're even facing a top 15, maybe top 10 defense. The Colts defense was not impressive to me against Jacksonville. They were not particularly impressive to me against Kansas City. It just felt like the Chiefs made a lot of mistakes. Travis Kelce dropped a pass in the end zone that would have iced the game. And I could go on and on about the offense. I thought the defense played great. The defense had a B-plus, A-minus game. Got to Matt Ryan a lot. That was one of our keys to the game because he's not going to move. He's a statue in the pocket. And the defense got to him. Forced a couple of turnovers. They had two fumbles. Secondary, I thought, was fine, aside from the final drive of the game. This one completely falls on the special teams unit. Completely. And if you blame anybody else other than the special teams unit, I can't say I agree with you. I know that you're not completely healthy, and when you have a practice squad kicker, things aren't always going to go as smoothly. And not having Harrison Butker yesterday really affected how the Chiefs operated in the special teams. You had the muff punt. Then after Sky Moore's muff punt, he got cold feet. He had the yips. He lets a ball bounce that he clearly could have caught and set the Chiefs' offense up in good position. He lets it bounce. It rolls inside the one-yard line. I was baffled to see Sky Moore back out there after two brutal plays in the punt return game. And I know he's a rookie. And I know that mistakes like that have happened in the NFL. They happen all the time. In fact, they happen at least in one game across the NFL slate in the noon and 3:25 games. There's going to be a special teams gaffe like that where you muff a punt. However, let's keep in mind that he won the starting job. Dave Tobe, Andy Reid, everybody involved with special teams, offense, Sky Moore earned that spot in the preseason, in training camp. And when you earn the spot, you're expected to not make mistakes like that. This is the NFL. And when you are trying to make an impact on this team, you can't be screwing up like that. Mecole Hardman had a phase like that a little bit 2 years ago and last year, I feel like. And all I ask for, and I think what most fans ask for from the Kansas City Chiefs special teams unit is just don't screw up. You don't need to do anything spectacular. We're not begging for punt return touchdowns. We're not begging for 60, 70-yard returns. We're begging not to cough the ball up. Keep the possession. You have a great offense. You have the best quarterback in the NFL. It would be smart just to hang on to the football. Now, if you could just do that every single time, then, yeah, I think we would never see a muff punt in the NFL. It didn't look like Sky Moore was trying to do much. It's not like he tried to catch it and saw an outlet. Thought he had a couple blocks. He just dropped the football, and it set the tone. So that was a problem for the special teams unit. Another problem was Isaiah Pacheco. Three different times, Isaiah Pacheco couldn't make it back to the 20. He slipped one time, again on the turf, just like Orlando Brown Jr. did. And on the last drive of the game, though it was bailed out by a 15-yard unsportsmanlike conduct penalty, he only got it back to the 10-yard line. I know there is a divide between people and what they would want their kick returner to do. You know, nowadays, most kickers can kick it out of the back of the end zone. But when a kicker can't kick it out of the back of the end zone, you think, well, why not return it? If it's 6, 7, 8 yards deep, we're paying you to make something happen. There's a time and place, though, for that. There's a time and place to return it out of the back of the end zone. There's time to let it go, not let any time run off the clock. Now, in the last drive of the game, he had to return it. And just like Sky Moore, Isaiah Pacheco earned that spot in training camp. The Chiefs believed in him and thought he could make an impact there. I have yet really to see a big impact from Isaiah Pacheco in the kick return game. So wasn't too impressed with Isaiah Pacheco in the kick return game. And I certainly wasn't impressed at all whatsoever with Matt Amendola. And I'd be shocked if Matt Amendola got another chance to kick for the Kansas City Chiefs this season. Misses an extra point, misses a 34-yarder, and you have to imagine that that was weighing on the minds of what the Chiefs were going to do in that final drive if they got in field goal range. Now, they may not have had a choice. They were nearing field goal range before Patrick Mahomes threw the interception that was intended for Juju Smith-Schuster, but Matt Amendola was never going to make that kick. Let's be honest here. If the Chiefs got the ball to the 35-yard line, you think Matt Amendola is making that kick? No. No, the interception was brutal at the end of the game, but it didn't feel like, wow, that was a devastating interception. It was devastating in terms of the loss, but after everything that had gone on, I was not confident whatsoever the Chiefs were going to find a way to win that game. It didn't have that feel to it. It was different, obviously, when they played Buffalo in the AFC divisional game last season. The offense was moving the ball. The Chiefs had Harrison Butker. They were in a rhythm. They were in a groove. And the Chiefs' offense was never in a groove yesterday. Two times, you had the ball inside the five. You couldn't punch the ball in the end zone. Those are problems. Those are mistakes. You were in the red zone a couple of times yesterday, only walked away with 17 points. It is only the second loss, second, in the Patrick Mahomes era that the defense has limited opponents to under 27 points, and the Chiefs lost. Both those losses came against the Indianapolis Colts. And like I said at the beginning of the show, there's times to overreact to losses. There's times to maintain your composure. This is not the first time the Chiefs lost to a bad Colts team. In fact, the last time they lost to the Colts, it was the year they won the Super Bowl. Is this the same type of team? No. Was it as infuriating of a loss? Yeah. That game was at home. It was on Sunday Night Football, and the Chiefs lost to Jacoby Brissett. This kind of felt similar in terms of the loss. However, how the loss happened was different. I think if the Chiefs have Harrison Butker yesterday, if the special teams unit just plays their C-plus game instead of an F type of game, the Chiefs win that game by 7 or 8 points. I mean, it's as simple as that. That doesn't excuse the poor play offensively, that the offense was wildly boring to watch, and despite the score, when I was watching games around the NFL, both at noon slate and 325, I thought the Chiefs was the most boring game. That was a snooze fest. That was ugly. Those were two offenses that could not move the ball. And I get if you're a defensive-minded person, that was fun to you. I'm not. I like to see shootouts. I like to see offense. I like to see the best quarterback in football on the field. And he was limited yesterday. Whether it be the play calling, his receivers not getting open, his running game being stagnant, his offensive line being putrid, that was just all around incredibly ugly. And we sit here today on Monday, not panicking, because the AFC West has been a complete and utter disappointment so far. The Chargers got blown out by 4 scores at home against the Jacksonville Jaguars. I understand Justin Herbert's banged up, but that Chargers team isn't getting any healthier. The Broncos were the only AFC West team to win yesterday, and if you tell me after last night the 2-1 Broncos are scary to you, I'd reevaluate what you think of the NFL. The Broncos are the most, I saw this tweet last night, the Broncos are the most 0-3, 2-1 team. They should have lost all three games. Their coach is weighing over his head. Russell Wilson has not been good this year. The Broncos' defense has been very good. But this is no longer a defensive-minded league. You have to be able to score, and when you're facing top offenses, you got to be able to win in shootouts. You could rebuttal right now and go, well, the Colts just beat the Chiefs after giving up 17 points and only scored 20. It's possible, yeah. But if that is your method, if that is your game plan, you're going to lose that game. Because there is going to be one stretch this season where the Chiefs' offense starts clicking, and they're not relying on Matt Amendola to give them points. And the special teams unit isn't coughing up the ball twice a game, isn't committing dumb penalties. And let us not forget, I've given a lot of praise to the defense today. That game very well could have been over on the final drive. The Colts' final game-winning drive could have been ended a minute or two before it. The Chiefs got a sack on third down. Chris Jones starts chirping with Matt Ryan. Whether you want to bash the officials for a penalty or not, guess what? the penalty was thrown. And we have seen that happen in the NFL. It's soft, yes, but we all understand it's a penalty. That has been thrown countless times before. In that point in the game, maybe not. I've seen it thrown a lot more in first and second quarters, sort of for an official to set the tone that that's not going to happen on my field tonight. Chris Jones understands the rules. He even admitted it in the post-game interview. I'm a veteran. I have to be better than that. Chris Jones has still been the best defensive player for the Chiefs, but it was a dumb penalty. If Chris Jones gets the sack and goes off celebrating to his sideline, the Chiefs get the ball back and likely go on to win that game. But he decides to mouth off to Matt Ryan, continue to mouth off, and it was, according to the official, Sean Smith, abusive language that he was not going to allow in an NFL game. We won't know what was said. We'll never know because we're never going to know what was said on the field. Unless after Chris Jones retires, he comes on a radio show and he's able to dive into exactly what he said. Just for the hell of it, because there would be no consequences then unless it really makes his image look bad. But that's a boneheaded play. And that's not smart. At that point in the game, you just have to get the sack. You can celebrate, just don't taunt the other team. That taunting has been incredibly ineffective, I guess you could say, in the last 2 years. When you look at the turnout of it, yeah, it brings emotion to the game. It's exciting for NFL fans. It's funny. It gives you material. But it wasn't funny yesterday, because it did cost the Chiefs 7 points. They continued the drive. The defense had to stay on for an extended period, and the defense was on the field all game long. They had to be gassed. They came up time and time again, but they played a great game. And aside from that penalty, which I didn't agree with the official throwing it, because you know that happens in the NFL games. You know that bad language, foul language, taunting, that happens. I get if you want to throw it in the second quarter, to throw it in that moment, unless Chris Jones said something absolutely absurd, I wouldn't agree with it. Because if it was something unbelievably absurd and threatening, I believe Matt Ryan would have reacted a little bit differently. But I'm not going to sit here and blame that penalty on the officials and just go, well, that's why we lost the game. The Chiefs played horribly yesterday. Now, on the flip side, the Colts didn't play that well either. And that is the concerning part to me. The Indianapolis Colts played their C-plus game. They fumbled twice. Jonathan Taylor didn't have over 90 yards rushing. Michael Pittman wasn't a big factor. I mean, Jelani Woods is the one who dominated the Chiefs yesterday. Had two of the touchdowns. Had the only two touchdowns for the Indianapolis Colts. The Colts didn't play an otherworldly type of performance to beat the Chiefs. Now, do I think that a lot of teams can do that out there? No, I think this was more of a any given Sunday fluke type of loss, and I can chalk it up to that because the special teams unit cost the Chiefs the game yesterday. That was brutal. The offense wasn't clicking. A lot of mistakes. This is still a team that can win the AFC West, because now my opinions have changed on the AFC West. I don't think the Raiders are that good. I certainly don't think the Broncos are that good, and I don't think the Chargers are going to be that healthy all game long or all season long. Justin Herbert is dealing with that rib injury, and it showed yesterday. Only 10 points for the Chargers. They lost 38-10 to the Jaguars. The Jags, who drafted number one overall in the draft last year. New head coach, second-year quarterback, went into L.A., thumped them by 28 points. It's a very winnable division still. They've only played one divisional opponent, and they beat them, and it's the divisional opponent that is going to give them the most trouble, the most fits. I think the Chiefs can handle Denver. I think the Chiefs can handle the Raiders. The best thing about this is now you have a bounce-back game and one that many people are going to write you off on. You don't have the pressure of trying to maintain your dominance, beat a team by 14 over a bad team like the Colts. No, you're going into Tampa Sunday Night Football against Tom Brady, him and his 7 Super Bowl rings. Now, they're coming off a loss as well, but you're going into Tampa on the road, Sunday Night Football, a chance to wipe away that loss that happened yesterday, regroup, and head back home for 2 games, which could be 2 of the bigger games at Arrowhead Stadium this year. So you have the Raiders after Tampa, and then you have the Buffalo Bills, who also lost yesterday to the Miami Dolphins. Weird AFC right now. A couple of the really good teams are banged up. Some of the good teams are underachieving. But really, as bad as it was yesterday for Kansas City, it could have been a hell of a lot worse. The AFC West could have ran the table, except for Kansas City. Buffalo could have thumped Miami, and you're going, this team's got a long, long ways to go. The good thing is, we here in Kansas City have been here before. In fact, it was a lot worse last year. The Chiefs started 2-3, or 3-4. It wasn't good. We were panicking at the time. So 2-1 with a bad loss to a bad football team, it happens in the NFL. It's not like the Chiefs lost 45-44, and Patrick Mahomes played his A-plus game. Now, the defense played great. I think the defense is going to be a lot better than people think. The special teams unit is not good, but special teams, few times in a game, if they just handle their business, make a major impact in it. I don't think Harrison Butker is going to be shanking extra points and 34-yarders every single game. I don't think Isaiah Pacheco will be returning the ball 10 yards or only getting to the 10-yard line every single time he takes it out of the back of the end zone. I don't think Sky Moore is going to fumble inside the 5-yard line and let a ball roll to the 1-yard line, because I honestly think they're going to make a positional change there. Might need to put Mecole Hardman back there because he hasn't been that much of an impact in the receiving game. Put a veteran back there. Lots of room to grow. We're 3 weeks in, and the Chiefs are still tied for first in the AFC West. That's where you can not overreact to it. If you want to overreact to it and still be mad and pissed off, hey, you got a long time before the next Sunday, before this coming Sunday against Tampa Bay. You can be upset. You can be angry. But we've stomached it. It's happened. Losses are going to happen this year. Losses like that very well may happen this year. But still, the expectation for this season is going to change if you beat Tampa Bay and Tom Brady on Sunday night. That's just the way it's going to go. You beat Tampa Bay, you beat the Raiders, and even if you lose to Buffalo, my opinion really hasn't changed. That this team, when really rolling, when not shooting themselves in the foot, have a chance to return to their fifth consecutive AFC Championship game. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk some college football. Kansas and Kansas State, both winners. We'll let you know how those games went. And now the outlook going into the last half, not even the last half, but maybe the next slate of conference games for both of the local teams. You're listening to The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN, Kansas City. Hey, Kansas City, this is Jack Johnson from ESPN Kansas City. I'm here to let you know that your favorite sportsbook, BetUS.com, is back for its 28th year of NFL action. With the industry's biggest sign-up bonus of up to 200%, BetUS offers its members the opportunity to cash in on all your favorite leagues, including the NFL, NBA, MLB, and more. They've also got hundreds of new casino games, including the coolest European slots, and their live dealers are waiting for you at the tables. You need a sportsbook with integrity and longevity, and you need to know that you're going to get paid. You need a sportsbook that offers everything, including live betting, MMA, golf, horses, esports, and all kinds of crazy bets. Call today at 1-800-79-BETUS. That's 1-800-79-BETUS, and they'll walk you through setting up your account. Nobody in the industry gives you better bonuses than BetUS. Join now and mention BetUS 2022, and you get up to 200% in bonuses on your first deposit. Nobody can beat that. Head to BetUS.com and join today. That's BetUS, where the game begins. Welcome back into The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I am your host, Jack Johnson. Usually we'd have Marco Marquez here on the board, but he right now is in a meeting, so it'll just be me running the board and continuing to host the show today, as we still have a lot to get into. We talked a lot of Chiefs in the first part of the show, but the Chiefs were only big news, or were not only the big news, over the weekend in Kansas City, whether you live in Kansas or Missouri. You know what? We'll even throw in all three local teams today, because Missouri was also in a national attention-getting game on Saturday against Auburn. But let's go by when these games actually happen. So we'll start with the Kansas Jayhawks, who played in front of a sellout in Lawrence on Saturday at David Booth Memorial Stadium. This was one of those games where you have the hype, you have the energy, you just needed to back it up. You needed to go in and prove that these first three games have not been a fluke. And I think most people had understood that Kansas was not a fluke three games into the season. I think fluke wins happen once. You know, if you upset somebody and you're really not a good team based off analytical data, advanced stats, then that's not going to happen again. You caught lightning in a bottle. But Kansas had thumped their FCS opponent. It was a bad FCS opponent, but they beat him by 46 points. They did exactly what they were supposed to do. Then you go into West Virginia, you go into Morgantown, and you beat the Mountaineers in overtime. And of course the excuse was, oh, well, West Virginia's not going to be very good. West Virginia went in and played Virginia Tech on Thursday and ran them out of their own building. One of the toughest places to play in college football, West Virginia won 33-10. So is West Virginia going to be tops in the Big 12? No. But are they a team that could be fighting for a bowl game? Yes. Then they beat Houston, a team that was ranked, a team that was supposed to win their conference, were projected to win their conference, and they beat them by 18 on the road. So I never really believed that Kansas was going to be a fluke then at that point. And then they went in and played Duke, a team they were favored to beat by a touchdown. And you have the crowd, you have the energy, you've been getting national media attention. They were talked about on College Game Day. You were getting all this media hype. And it felt like if you were there, if you were watching on TV, don't want to say it was a meat necklace game. I just felt confident that Kansas was going to be able to handle Duke and handle Duke with ease. Now, credit to Duke. There were a couple of times that game could have spiraled, and they stayed in it. And that is crazy, and I mean crazy to talk about in regards to Kansas football, that you're hanging around with Kansas football, and that's a good thing. But this is one of those performances where on the box score, at the end of the day, you go 35-27. You know, Kansas won the game. They covered. You feel good about it. It just wasn't as close as I think people really thought. Or that score doesn't indicate how close the game or how much of a blowout the game really was. There was one point in the fourth quarter where Kansas got a stop on fourth down, and it was negated due to a pass interference call. That was not pass interference. If Duke turns it over there, Kansas wins by 15, you feel a lot different about this game. But the fact that Duke still had a chance at the very end to tie this game up and send it to overtime, that's what we'll take away from it. Now, that's also the offense not being as aggressive with the ball at the end of the game. You have statistically the best quarterback in the Big 12 right now in Jalen Daniels, who is continuing to impress the national media, getting Heisman recognition. Crazy to think about with a Kansas quarterback, but he was just as good on Saturday. He was unstoppable. And that might have been, in fact, I'm going to go as far to say that was his best game as a member of the Kansas Jayhawks. The running game was great with Daniel Hyshaw and Devin Neal. And still, you know, you talk about Kansas winning this game by 8 points. They, like we talked about with Kansas City, shot themselves in the foot a couple of times. First drive of the game, moved the ball down with ease. It was using a hot knife and cutting butter. It was that easy for Kansas's offense. But they get down inside the five, and they couldn't punch it in. They turn it over on fourth and goal from the one. Devin Neal also fumbled deep in Duke territory. You had mistakes like that. And those were two drives that would have led to points. So those things can get cleaned up, but you still walk away and go, man, Kansas played their B-minus game and walked away a winner by 8 points against an undefeated team, against an undefeated Power 5 team. Things are changing in Lawrence, and they've been changing for the last 3 weeks, but now you're 4-0. They are not ranked, much to the dismay of some talking heads out there. I can understand as to the circumstances as to why they were not ranked because of the next team we're going to talk about in Kansas State and Oklahoma. If Kansas State didn't go into Norman and beat the Sooners, folks, Kansas is in the top 25. This also, though, isn't a bad thing. This is not the end of the world, and of course nobody in Lawrence is thinking that because you're 4-0. It's the first time Kansas has won more than three games in a season since 2009, and they've done it in the first four games of the 2022 season. This motivates your players. This puts a chip on their shoulder. And going into a game, which it's the biggest one in the season. Now, you may say every game from here on out is the biggest one in the season because you're into conference play. You're no longer playing non-con opponents. You're playing an Iowa State team that has gotten the media hype that you are now getting a couple years back. Matt Campbell and Iowa State, what he inherited a couple years back was not a great program, and he turned them into a top of the Big 12 contender. I'll put it at that. Not a title contender, but a team that can finish in the top half of the Big 12. And not many people could have thought that of Iowa State back in 2014, 2015. Matt Campbell's done a good job. Has he underachieved? Yeah, last year I think they underachieved despite having a top 10 team to begin the year. They finished, what, 7-5? 8-5? But they still have that energy around them. It's still a good football program. It's still a coach that's going to get a lot of offers in the offseason. So Iowa State will be coming into Lawrence, and it's your chance then to get ranked. If Kansas wins this Saturday in Lawrence against Iowa State, they won't just be ranked. They may be ranked 20th, 21st, maybe go as far to say top 20. That depends on what happens from the teams ranked from 18 to 25. But I'm saying there's an outside chance because right now they fall at the 26 range. They are right on the outside looking in. They are right behind Kansas State, who we just mentioned went into Norman on Saturday and beat the Oklahoma Sooners. Tip of the cap to Adrian Martinez. I was not high on Adrian Martinez. I feel like a lot of people wrote him off, including myself, after the performance against Tulane. Because he had the best performance of any Big 12 quarterback on Saturday. I thought Jalen Daniels was phenomenal. He was great. I'm going to give this edge to Adrian Martinez, though, because of who he had to play, what environment he had to go into. I think Jalen Daniels had the second best game. I thought Adrian Martinez had the best game. Because of what was at stake, too. You think about the line in this game, the meaning behind this game. Kansas State has beaten Oklahoma four times. Or now, excuse me, five times. In their last 11 matchups. Everybody else in the Big 12 has beaten Oklahoma one or two times, if that. Kansas has not beaten Oklahoma in their last 10 meetings, and they'll go to Norman here in 2 weeks. But Kansas State did have a lot on the line on Saturday, and that's where, whether you're a Kansas fan, a Missouri fan, or a Kansas State fan, you have to acknowledge and tip your cap to the job that Chris Klieman and Adrian Martinez and that defense did against Oklahoma. Oklahoma had dominated its first three opponents. They're coming back home, and they're playing a team that I don't think they would overlook because of the success Kansas State had had against them, but they kind of did. It, at least it looked like it did early on. Kansas State jumped out 14-0. They were taking care of the football. Deuce Vaughn was great. Adrian Martinez was better. Now, Oklahoma, they had their surge in the second quarter, started having some busted coverage against Kansas State, going over the top of the defense, the deep ball. Dylan Gabriel still had a career day. But when it mattered most, Oklahoma could not stop K-State's offense. Now, the frustrating thing if you're a Kansas State fan is you're going, where the hell was this in the first 3 weeks? Why was Adrian Martinez sheltered in the first 3 weeks? Why was he not allowed to cut it loose? Why was he not allowed to throw the ball 35, 40 times a game? Because he was wildly effective against the Sooner secondary. And he had the play of the season through three games or four games so far of Kansas State on that third and long when Oklahoma needed a stop to get the ball back with under 3 minutes to go. And he ran it for 40, 45 yards inside the five and then punched it in a few plays later. That was the Adrian Martinez Kansas State was hoping for going into the season. They didn't get it through the first three games. But back to the point of frustration if you're a Kansas State fan, well, Tulane was a team you scored 10 points against. And Tulane this weekend lost to Southern Miss. So that's when you go, man, if we would have won that game, even with our sloppy performance, if you won that game, you're 4-0, you're likely top 13 in the nation. You're coming back home to play Texas Tech, in which you're expected now to be 4-1, but could have been 5-0. The good thing is, though, your goal was always to compete for a Big 12 title, to get to the Big 12 championship game, and the loss to Tulane didn't affect that. It really didn't. They still control their own destiny. There's still tough opponents on their schedule, and the Big 12 is kind of even this year, I guess the best way to put it. There's no top dog in the Big 12 this year. Now, Oklahoma State, you may say, is the top dog at the moment because Oklahoma lost. You may say Baylor is the top dog, but they've already lost, though it was to BYU, a non-con opponent, and was in the road in Provo, Utah. But the Big 12 is very beatable this year. You could very well lose three games and make the Big 12 title game. You don't need to be 11-1. You don't need to be 10-2. I think the Big 12 is going to cannibalize itself. We talk about that all the time in the AFC West. The Big 12 is going to be very competitive. And in large part, it's due to Kansas State being a top-half team and Kansas not being the basement dweller. The worst team in the standings right now, when you look at record, is West Virginia and Texas. Both those teams should make a bowl game this year. West Virginia maybe gets close, but maybe not all the way, maybe five wins. TCU's undefeated. Kansas is undefeated. Oklahoma State is undefeated. I mean, really, pinpoint a team right now and you go, that by far and away is the weakest team in the conference. You can't. Texas may be 2-2. It's still Texas. West Virginia may be 2-2. They just beat Virginia Tech by 23 on the road. It is great for the conference. Fantastic, in fact, with the realignment coming. Oklahoma and Texas lost on Saturday, and they're going to the SEC. The Big 12 is kind of giving them a kick in the ass on their way out. That you may be leaving, but just so you know, you don't dominate this conference anymore. I mean, top to bottom right now, it's been impressive. Iowa State 3-1, TCU 3-0, Oklahoma State 3-0, Tech 3-1, K-State 3-1, Baylor 3-1, Kansas 4-0. I like the direction of the conference right now. And Kansas State, they proved that Tulane loss is washed away, wiped away. And that happened a couple years back where K-State lost to Arkansas State at home and then bounced back with a win in Norman. Now, it's about building on that. You know, Adrian Martinez had a career day, the best of his life, and you're not going to get that version of Adrian Martinez every single week, but you can get half that. You can get 70% of that and still win some football games. And the important thing for this is that Deuce Vaughn, again, was great. He got back into his rhythm. Adrian Martinez spread the ball around. Malik Knowles was great. The defense, phenomenal. They gave up 34 points to Oklahoma. That's a good Oklahoma offense. And one of those touchdowns was a garbage time touchdown. They were winning that game by 14 late in Norman. Really, when you think about it, a controlling win for Kansas State. And a great win. And based off of aspirations, the goals of this season, that is a season-changing type of win. You lose that game and you don't even cover. You lose to Oklahoma by 14 or 17, you're starting to go, okay, Big 12 title out the window. Let's just win six or seven games. And as good as Oklahoma is, if you would have been dominated by Oklahoma, you're thinking differently. And if Adrian Martinez didn't play well, you're going, can Adrian Martinez even finish out this season? One of our fact or fiction questions was, will Adrian Martinez be the quarterback by week 8 or 9, I think it was? He will now. Will Howard is not taking his spot anytime soon, unless there was an injury. And one more important thing to point out with Adrian Martinez, he has not turned the ball over. That was a major problem at Nebraska, and for as much as he was throwing the ball around in Norman on Saturday, he took care of it. There was a couple suspect throws, but that happens when you're throwing the ball that much and you're that confident. He was confident to even make those throws. And if Adrian Martinez was timid, like he was against Tulane, K-State would have been run out of the building, would have been crushed by the Sooners. But great win for Chris Klieman, great win for the Wildcats. They're now 3-1 and 1-0 in Big 12 play. They'll go back to Manhattan to take on the Texas Tech Red Raiders, who beat Texas over the weekend for a showdown at Bill Snyder Family Stadium. Believe the Wildcats opened up as a 7-point favorite. As for Kansas, they are a 3.5-point underdog against Iowa State at home. And lastly, we have some Missouri people in the studio, Missouri fans, that is. Awful, awful weekend when you talk about the two local teams in Missouri, the Tigers and the Chiefs. about as bad as it could be. And for as bad as the Chiefs played on Sunday, Missouri had one of the most head-scratching, gut-wrenching, if you're a Missouri fan, if you're not, a laughable loss against the Auburn Tigers on Saturday. Low-scoring game. You fell behind early 14-0. You tied it up 14-14. Quarterback play with Brady Cook has still been bad. Luther Burden did not get many touches. Didn't get many targets, for that matter. And that is your best player, a true freshman. But Missouri had their chance to win the game. Twice, in fact. Late in the fourth quarter, you get the ball inside the 10. You're just burning out the clock. You're trying to set up a good field goal position for your kicker. And Mevis comes on inside of 25 yards and just shanks it as time expires. Just shanks it. Now, I saw some complaints on Twitter of Eli Drinkwitz's game management at the end. And I think when you look at that situation, you're inside the 5, clock's running out, and of course, worst case scenario is you fumble the ball or you turn it over. But when the clock's running out and you don't want to get the ball back to Auburn, I think you can still burn out the clock but try to score. Try a couple running plays. And in hindsight, Missouri fans are going, yeah, I would have loved for them to punch the ball in the end zone because Auburn hasn't scored since the first quarter. They're not going to be able to drive down the field and get a touchdown. But you wanted to set up your kicker, who's been phenomenal, to kick a field goal to win the game inside of 25 yards. But Eli Drinkwitz decided just to kneel on the ball, not get the ball back to Auburn, end the game with his kicker. Many coaches would have done that. It's not a horrible coaching decision. And in hindsight, it still was the right move. Your kicker's been great. In fact, last year, I believe he had a game-tying 55-plus-yard field goal. I want to say it was against Boston College. So he's been there before. He's been great. But he shanks the field goal. So you go to overtime. And once again, you shoot yourself in the foot. That has been the message of the day. Shooting themselves in the foot. Well, Auburn gets the ball first in overtime. Missouri's defense makes a stand. And here comes Auburn to kick the field goal. And they have an offsides penalty. Missouri, that is, special teams unit. Once again, the message of the day, bad special teams unit. Offsides, Auburn gets to re-kick, and it goes through, 17-14. Still a chance to win the game. And in fact, before you even run a play, you would have a chance to tie the game. I know he shanked a 25-26-yarder, but from where you start in overtime, it's a makeable field goal at the college level if you're a good kicker. But Missouri, of course, had their chance to win the game. And a couple plays in, they get that chance. Hole opens up on the left side, the outside of the run. Great blocking downfield. And a player's trying to make a heroic play, an extra effort play, so I can't fault that. But in the moment, you can criticize the mechanics. And maybe knowing in that moment, if I run out of bounds, we're setting ourselves up nicely. But in the moment of a player, especially an 18 and 22-year-old, they're trying to win the game. You're not looking at that play and saying, all right, if I run out of bounds here with a chance to win the game, I'm going to be criticized. Because what happens if we don't score inside the 5? But Nathaniel Pete breaks open, gets an open space, and you're going, man, Missouri's going to win the game here. Even in that as that play's developing, as the blocks are happening, you're going, he's going to have a chance. And as he's reaching the ball over the plane, before he's even hit, he drops the ball out of the back of the end zone. Auburn recovers, and it's a touchback, and Missouri loses. And that is about as bad of a way you could lose a game, going from we're winning it two separate times in a matter of 20 minutes, two separate times that you are about to celebrate a for sure fire win by the winning probability, the expectation of that moment. A field goal inside of 30 yards is a easy make for a college kicker. And for a kicker as good as Mevis, he shanked it. So then you go into overtime. Nathaniel Pete, 19-yard run, tries to extend. And if he gets the tip of the ball over the pylon, that game's over. But unfortunately, the ball bounces into the end zone. Auburn recovers and the Missouri Tigers fall to 2-2. So the three local teams, a lot of ups and downs. Kansas a winner. They're now 4-0 on the season, 1-0 in Big 12 play. Kansas State shocks the 6th-ranked Sooners in Norman. They are now 3-1 and 1-0 in conference play. And lastly, the Missouri Tigers drop to Auburn in their first SEC game of the season. They're now 2-2 and will go on to host Georgia this coming Saturday. The Bulldogs are number one in the country. So curious what that spread is going to be. All right, we're going to take our final break of the show. When we come back, we'll wrap it up with some Royals talk as they broke a record on Sunday in the final home game of the season against the Seattle Mariners. You're listening to The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN, Kansas City. Welcome back into The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, running the board and hosting the show today as Marco Marquez is away on a meeting, but he will be back tomorrow as we will continue our talk with the NFL and maybe some college football. And getting in later on to the week, we'll, of course, have our three keys to the game for Kansas City and their matchup next with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, as well as our three heroes that will happen on Friday. But still, action-packed week for you, but today is wrapping up. We won't do any fact or fiction today because what we are going to talk about is these Kansas City Royals. But first things first, let's give a shout-out to American Family Insurance, because with any dream, the wind won't always be at your back, the sun won't always be shining, and some rain is going to fall. American Family Insurance is like a good solid roof that you can trust to protect your biggest dreams. With plans that can save you up to 23% all when you bundle your home and auto and continue to dream fearlessly no matter what comes your way. Visit Kim Howard and Associates Agency at 105th and Metcalf in Overland Park, or give Kim and her team a call at 913-649-2002 for a quote on your home and auto insurance today. Again, that phone number is 913-649-2002. It's been ugly. I don't even need to tell you that. We all know it's been ugly with the Kansas City Royals this year. But sometimes baseball can be beautiful. And as Billy Beane said, or Brad Pitt said in Moneyball, how can you not be romantic about baseball? For as bad as it's been for the Royals, for those in attendance yesterday, and you know what, if you were in attendance yesterday for a 1-10 game while the Chiefs were playing at noon, you earn your stripes as a Royals fan. In fact, you're already earning your stripes for going to a day game in September with a team that is nearly, or excuse me, might be over 30 games under 500. They're not playing tonight. But the Royals are 27 games, so close to 30. Yep, I thought I was right near that 27, 28, 29 games under 500 mark for the Kansas City Royals. But yesterday they're playing the Mariners, a team that is close to snapping their long, long, long postseason drought, the longest of any team in baseball right now. And they're in Kansas City. They're playing them on a Sunday, a rubber match, a series finale, and the final home game for the Royals this year. They jump out on the Royals 11-2. Would not have blamed you if you left early. Listen, it's Sunday. You got work the next day. You spent money to go to that game, and it's been terrible. It's been ugly. Pitching wasn't great. The bullpen was horrible. The offense got a little something going early on, but for the most part, that game was all wrapped up. That game was over. And in the sixth inning, somehow, some way, the Royals found a way to claw back. All in one inning, by the way. And this Royals team has not ever shown any sign of life like that in one inning, let alone one game this year. Remember, I think for the first 3 months of the season, 3 or 4 months of the season, the Royals did not win a game when trailing after the first inning. It was roll over and die time if they were down 1-0, if that, or 2-0. They trailed 11-2 in this game, and yet they respond in the sixth inning with 11 runs. And keep in mind, the Mariners scored 2 in the top of the sixth to make it 11-2, and then all of a sudden, 11 runs come to the plate for the Royals. They finished with 14 hits on the day, 13 runs. There was some offense in Kansas City yesterday. It just wasn't with the likes of Patrick Mahomes. It was a lineup that had a hell of a lot of rookies in it. And then to close out the final three innings, the Royals' bullpen found its groove. Anthony Misevich did allow a run in the seventh, but Dylan Coleman and Scott Barlow locked down the final two innings, and the Royals win 13-12 to move to 63-90 on the season. It was fun. It was a blast. And even after that game, I turned on the Royals and said, oh, this is now entertaining to me. You want something good to happen in Kansas City today. It just so happened to be with the Royals, trying to play home wrecker. But 11 runs in one inning is just ridiculous. And I believe ESPN Stats put out a stat last night or yesterday after the game that teams had lost upwards of 840 games, I believe it was. 840 games when trailing by 9 runs in a game. 840 consecutive games teams had lost. The Royals snapped that streak. These Royals, who are 63-90, and how fitting is it that the game-tying or the go-ahead run, game-tying and go-ahead runs were driven in by Ryan O'Hearn, who with 2 outs doubled it to the corner in right field. 11 runs is absurd. And I tip my cap to those that were in attendance yesterday. So they finish off their season at Kauffman Stadium with not a bad record. It's just been ugly on the road. 39-42 for the Royals this year at Kauffman Stadium, and we will see them back in Kansas City in 2023. But no complaints whatsoever from the baseball team in Kansas City yesterday as they beat the Mariners 13-12. Well, that'll wrap up our Monday edition of The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 ESPN Kansas City. I've been your host, Jack Johnson. Mark will be back tomorrow, and of course, I will be back tomorrow. So you take it easy, Kansas City. We'll talk to you at 10 a.m. on Tuesday.